Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome again to another episode of Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and it's July 11th, 2013, and I'm very, very excited this evening. I have another seasoned professional in the golf business, Mr. Chuck Evans, who I'm going to bring out in just a moment. But just to let listeners know, for any of those of you that want to call into the program, you can certainly call in at any point over the next hour. It's number six, area code 646-716-4667. You can certainly call in and speak to Chuck and I. If you want to email me, if you're interested in coming on the program, whether you're in the teaching profession or you're somebody in the golf industry in general, you can certainly email me personally at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And, of course, we always want you to visit the page in Facebook, and it's facebook.com/golftalklive blog. Make sure it's Golf Talk Live blog that you put on after the facebook.com. Let me just quickly give you a quick rundown here on Chuck, and then I'll bring him into the program. Chuck is the Executive Director of Instruction for the Medicus Golf Academies, and he's currently in Kansas City, Missouri, at the Tiffany Greens Golf Club. Good evening, and welcome to the program, Chuck.
Hey, Ted. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate it, and as I've said to all of my guests, I enjoy this is one of the perks of being in the golf business. You get to meet and talk to some great people, and I'm certainly looking forward to this. And as most of you know that tuned in last week, I had another top profession in the teaching profession, Don Law from Boca Raton, Florida. My tongue's tied this evening for some reason. And certainly enjoyed his conversation, and I'm looking forward to my conversation this evening with Chuck. So, Chuck, just to start things off, we talked a little bit off-air and wanted to sort of give you the heads-up of what we were going to do this evening. And let's just first talk a little bit about your academy, what you're doing right now in Kansas City. Talk a little bit about some of the different programs and things that you have going out there right now.
Well, you know, Ted, we run the same programs no matter what location we're at, whether we're in Arizona in the winter or Florida or Kansas City here in the summer. But, you know, we run a junior academy, and we have that base for beginners just getting in, as well as players who have already been playing. And then we have our elite juniors, and that's prepping them for college. And, of course, we do the private lessons, and we do our half day, full day, and 2 day golf schools. We also do clinics and corporate outings at all of our locations. So, it's pretty much the same. We just kind of change it a little bit. We don't really change the number of programs, but we kind of change how they run, you know, depending on the facility and how long, you know, that facility's open every year.
Right. Now, how long do you keep the facility up in? How long are you up in Kansas City? Missouri.
I'm here from May 1st to October 1st, and then back to Arizona at Gold Canyon Golf Resort from November 1 till May 1.
Wow. Boy, you've got it good.
Well, yeah, everybody says, boy, you just got a great job. And I go, yeah, I can't wait till I retire that I can get a regular 9-to-5 gig, you know?
Yeah,
I'll
that's
get
so
a
true.
Real well, job.
Exactly. Well, as I was just mentioning to Chuck off air to the listeners here. Obviously, as most of you have known, if you've been tuning in for the last couple of months, that I'm originally from Canada and certainly love my country. But as far as golfing and that, we don't have the same season that they do down here in some of the southern states. So I migrated some years ago down to Florida and particularly in the Panama City Beach area, and just needed to get away from shoveling snow, to be quite honest. I was so tired of it, and I'm getting on in years. I'm not certainly that old yet, but going to be 50 next year. And I just decided I had had enough of shoveling, and it was time to get down here and work on my game and help some others with the game. So let's just get into a little bit about the academy and things like that. First off, very quickly, Chuck, if you want, just before we continue on, as I mentioned to you off air, go ahead and give a quick plug. Let them know if they're interested in attending the academy, how they can get in touch with you, or websites, that sort of thing. So if you want to just go ahead and do that real quick, and then we'll continue on.
Yeah, you can go to medicusgolfschools.com and see our locations there. You can also go to my website, chuckevansgolf.com, if you want to, spend time with me. The Medicus Golf Schools site will show all the available instructors and their sites. And we have, right now we have about 20 different locations across the U.S., and then we have five countries as well.
Wow. What just some of the countries that they're in, besides obviously here in the U.S.?
Right. Well, Canada, so ha-ha,
yeah.
Right? Spain, South Africa, Russia, and I can never remember. It might only be four. Well, U.S., I guess, so that's five.
Right, right. Well, that's fantastic. I mean, that's certainly a great expansion program. I didn't realize that they had them up. Where, just out of curiosity, where in Canada is the is it just one, or is there a few of them?
No, it's, you know, actually what I'll have to do is go to a different site, and while we're talking, I'll pull it up
okay.
And let you know here. I don't spend any time, obviously, up there.
Right.
Yeah.
When you a little bit later in the program, when you find it, and that, you can certainly let us know, and I'll let the listeners up in Canada know in case they want to visit that particular location or locations up there. But let's just talk about when you're working with some of the students. I've got just a few questions here that I wanted to ask you. When you're mm-hmm. when you're working at your academies and things like that, what are some of the things now I know you had mentioned that you're working with obviously a lot of juniors, and I know that you've worked with not only beginning golfers but more advanced golfers. We'll talk about that in a little bit of time. But working with some of your younger, particularly your junior, what are some of the things that you try to start off and instill in them? What are some of the things that you start with?
You know, we kind of have a deal where golf is down the list of their priorities in life. And we explain this to them and the parents when we have our initial set down with them. And we tell them, you know, that we want them to be good citizens, obviously, and we try to instill that upon
mm-hmm.
them. But, you know, we want them to, you know, the priority is their family, then school, then golf. So,
right.
You know, you have to spend time with your family as a junior. I mean, your family are supporting you. They're the ones,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're the ones, you know, that are ultimately putting the bill for everything this junior does.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then also, we want them to keep their school up. Don't meet the standards, their education standards, and they have, you know, some grades that might not be too whippy, they are suspended from the program until they can get those grades back up.
Right.
And like I said, then you know, Golf Week magazine, Jim Achenbach did an article on us a few years ago, and he interviewed some of the parents. And one of the parents said, you know, the golf is way down the list with these, you know, what these instructors are instilling in our kids. They're teaching these kids how to be responsible and how to be a human that's going to contribute to society. So that's kind of what we do. So.
Well, and that's good. And we've talked about this, excuse me, with a number of the guests that have been on before. It's not really just about golf. I mean, obviously, golf is a passion for both of us. We both enjoy the game. And obviously, the listeners tuning in tonight and previous nights that we've been on air here, certainly golf is important. And we want to, you know, that's why we're in the profession. But at the same time, we have to really, as instructors, instill some good core values. Because I think if people just
right.
focus solely on the golf, like you said, and they're not really learning, you know, other areas in their life. And of course, we're not trying to be parents. I mean, obviously, that's a parent's role, and we're not trying to take over that responsibility. But at the same time, if their children are being exposed to us as teaching professionals or even at a school somewhere else, just a regular educational school, there's a certain responsibility that comes with that profession. And you can't take that lightly. And I think even in golf, it has to be the same way. It's not just about telling them how to hit the ball and how to do the drills and things like that. It's about golf is a game, really, that mirrors life in many, many ways. And people have written books about it and things like that. And I think as instructors, we have to take that seriously and not just focus on the golf end of it, but also on, as I said, the good values and making sure that grades are being kept up and things like that. So it's good that you have something implemented in your academy.
Yeah, and again, that's like I said, golf, you know, they're coming to us for golf, but at the end of the day, they need to learn how to be responsible and take responsibility for their actions and to grow up to be good citizens. And if we can help do that, that's great. I mean, and it's like you said, we tell the parents, you know, look, you're the parent, we're the coach. So you do the parenting, we'll do the coaching, and let's don't cross those lines. So You know, so don't try to teach little Johnny something, because we might be working on something totally different. So
Right. We
kind of established those lines right off the bat.
Well, and that's a key thing, too. I think, you know, if the parents are going to bring, as you say, little Johnny into to the academy, then they really need to have a hands-off as far as the golf end of it is concerned, because I think that's, you know, it's nice that dad wants to get in there and play with his son and or daughter, and that's certainly a great thing. But I think from the teaching aspect, if you're going to go to the trouble of you know, signing somebody up to join in on an academy or any, even just one lesson, I think it's important that the parents have that hands-off approach and let the coach do their job.
Right, right. And our Canadian locations, by the way, are in Ottawa and Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Now, how did I know there was going to be one? You know, I was thinking to myself, I'll bet you there's going to be one. If not in Ottawa, there's going to be one close, and that's because that's where the capital is in Canada.
Oh,
so, you know, all the politicians are probably lining up, I'm sure. But but anyway, let's talk about a few things just about golf in general with respect to your academies. And I just want to get a sense of how important, because there's been a lot of debate over the years. Some people are, and you'll understand in a second here, how important is feel to a player? When you're teaching these young, whether it's young kids or any level, how important is feel in their development?
Well, I'm not one that really believes in feel, because number one,
okay,
you can't teach feel. Number two, it's not quantifiable.
Okay.
You have to learn what the mechanics are, and then that mechanic will produce a certain sensation, whether it's visual,
mm-hmm,
because we sense those things visually, and then that kind of sends the messages, you know, from the brain to the body to do X, Y, and Z. And
right.
So, you know, to me, a field player, if you take them, let's say, to the top of their backswing and you move that club a quarter of an inch, if they can't feel the difference in that, I would say they're not a true field player. I have never met one, never taught one, but at the end of the day, when we have these kids out there and they're hitting certain distances, let's say they're working on, you know, distance wedges, you know, they'll get a sense, they'll see it, and you can see them. They're kind of watching how far they're swinging the club and how fast they're swinging it. So you might say it's feel, but what I see all the time is them monitoring what they're doing, and that produces the shot they're trying to hit. So that's what we try to tell them a lot is, you know, you're never trying to hit the golf ball. You're trying to make a shot and then let
right.
the shot, yeah, let the motion make the shot.
Well, and you're exactly right. And the reason why I asked that in that manner, and because the next question I had was obviously mechanics, because there are some people that are very mechanic. Like, for instance, out on the tour years ago, I mean, you had players like Nick Faldo and some
right.
of the others that were very, you know, had specific positions and things like that. And obviously they developed. I think, and certainly correct me if I'm wrong, I think feel is something that really a player develops over time. I mean, obviously, like you said, you feel that sensation when the club gets back to a certain position over time through repetitiveness and through that motion, if you will, a continual motion. I think that you would develop a feel at that point. But I don't think somebody just sort of from the very beginning really starts with the feel position, because it's like you said, there's really nothing to feel until you have some mechanics
right.
in place.
Right, and if you ask questions, you know, you might have a player, and you might ask him three questions. Did you feel that? No. And then you might do something visually, have them watch you. They might say, oh, I see that. Okay, or they might say, okay, I hear what you're saying. Well, typically, the response to your question is going to tell them, or tell me, the best way to teach this person. So if they're not feeling anything, I'm going to go into the kinesthetic part where they can actually, I'll move them, or I'll go into the part where they can see what I'm doing, okay, so they'd be a visual learner. Or when they say, okay, I hear what you're saying, that tells me they learn more from an auditory session. So I'll kind
right.
of hear everything around those questions.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's true. And I think, obviously, as a teaching professional, you have to be a great listener, first off. I mean, anybody can talk and everybody can you know, I think not everybody can teach, obviously, but one of the, I think, key elements of any good teacher is to be a good listener. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to, you know, you really have to listen to your students, what they're saying to you, pick up on that, and then adjust, you know, according to whatever you need to do. Now, just for very quickly, for those of you that are tuning in a few minutes later from the start of the broadcast, I'm here this evening with my very special guest, Mr. Chuck Evans. He's the Executive Director of Instruction at Dometicus Golf Academies, and he's currently out in Kansas City, Missouri at the Tiffany Greens Golf Club. And for what, until you said, I think it was October?
October 1,
and then he's heading to Arizona to another one of his locations, and going to be staying there until, when was that again, Chuck?
May 1st.
May 1st. So he's certainly going to be enjoying some good weather over the next year, unlike some of my Canadian friends up there that are going to be suffering in the winter months. Let me just move things here to a little bit different area. I want to get back and talk about some of the things that you're doing at the Academy, but what I want to talk about, one of the things that I found, and we've talked about this a few times on the program, is the practice session. And I'm not even talking about the Academy, but I'm just talking about the average person that wants to go out there and improve improve their game. One of the things that I've certainly noticed, and I'm sure you've seen the same thing, is really no sense of purpose when they're out on the driving range or out in the practice facility. What are some of the things that you like to instill in your students? Obviously, you're giving them specific lessons and things and working on parts of their game. What type of a regiment, if you will, or routine do you like to have them do? I mean, obviously, people are going to do certain things on their own, but what do you sort of instill into them that they take from your academy when they're going out and working on their own? What do you like to instruct them to do?
Well, and obviously it depends on what segments we're working on. If we're working on something related to what the body is doing, I like for them to do that at home in front of a mirror so that they can see exactly what they're doing. And when it comes to practice tee, I don't want them thinking about that. I want them thinking about where their ball is starting and what kind of curve it has. So those are, for full swing, that's how I want them to practice. For the short game stuff, obviously, I want them working on, you know, 40 yards and in, some chipping and some putting. We have, you know, drill stations and things for that as well. But one of the things that people are really, really like is I will put a one of those driveway markers, set it up vertically on a line that's in line with their target and in line with their golf ball. And then from a square stance, I will ask them to start the ball right or left of that stick. And so they learn, what they're learning there is how to control the club face for their start line.
Right.
So, you know, I had a guy a few weeks ago, and I said, so what do you think your club is doing? He goes, well, I don't know. And I go, well, if you want your face to point to the right, how would you do that? And he goes, I don't know. I never know what my hands are doing. I said, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. So I had him do this drill, and I'd have him start it to the right, then start it to the left, and we're doing this from a square stance.
Right.
And we start with smaller shots, like half swings, you know, to build the confidence.
Right.
Then I have him make full swings. And then what I'll do is I'll tell them, now we're going to make this tougher. I'm not going to tell you which direction to start it until you start your downswing. So it took him two or three tries, but he did do that, and I go, so do you know what your hands are doing now? And he goes, well, I know better what they're doing. I go, well, they're doing something because now you're starting the ball where you want to start it. So that's a great drill to learn how to control, you know, the initial flight or path that the ball takes off on, you know, of your golf ball. Learn that face.
Right.
And once they get the face direction they want or that starting, then we'll work on the path piece. So. But I always start them with that because I want them to focus on what their hands are doing.
Right, exactly. And I think it's important that they understand that. I think most – and the reason why I asked that particular question about what to do at the range is obviously when you go up to some of these ranges, whether it's at a golf course or just a private range of some sort, you just sort of see the same – thing day after day and, you know, hour after hours, people just beating ball after ball with really no sense of purpose, no sense of understanding of what they're working on or what they're doing. And, you know, when you get a student that comes in, especially, I'm not talking about somebody that's going through, say, your academy, but just off the street sort of wants to get a lesson or two, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll say, well, you know, I can't do this and I can't do that. And you'll say, okay, well, when you go to the range and you're practicing, what are some of the things you're working on? Well, I pull up my driver and I might hit 20 balls this way. And, you know, and there's really no, you know, it's just there's no sense of structure to their practice. And it's no wonder they're not improving. Right. And they just can't seem to comprehend that, you know, hitting 150 balls or 50 balls or what have you without some sort of purpose and understanding of what it is that you're trying to accomplish, you're never going to improve. And the sad part of it is, Chuck, is that they not only not do that on the range, but then they'll start to do that when they go out and play around. And really what they should be doing is in reverse. They should be doing that on the practice range, is working on these different aspects of their game while they're in the practice session and not out on the golf course, because they get out there and they're hitting a slice or hooking the ball and they're trying to, you know, make all adjustments and out there. Well, it's too late.
Exactly.
You know, you have to sort of, you have to play, you know, you have to play with what you've got that day and worry about it the next time. And that's what I see. And that's what many of the other guests that have come on, I'm sure you've seen it over the years as well. So how do you, you know, if you get somebody coming into your academy like that, that's, you know, maybe not taking a lot of lessons, what do you try to instill? What do you say to them to try and break them of that habit?
Well, I mean, I kind of go through the thing that you just said. I said, you know, and I'll ask them, what do you do when you practice? Well, I'm trying to get rid of my slice or whatever it is. Okay, well, how are you doing that? You know, what are you focusing on? What do you do? I said, because you can look up and down this range, and none of these people basically are out there practicing with a purpose. So I will give them a plan, how to set up a drill station. I'll also ask them if they've ever been to a PGA Tour event. And, yeah, they'll almost say no, but the ones that do say yes, I go, well, if you're there on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, every single player on tour is out there with their training aid and their practice station set up. And that's what they do. They're hitting balls based on their practice station. Now, you know, when the bell rings on Thursday, all that stuff goes away, you know. But I mean, just over the years, if you ever seen Vijay practice when he used to lay the bottle outside the shaft, I mean, he does that every single day. So and you have to have a purpose for that.
Yeah, and that's something I know over the years, as I've mentioned before on the program, I used to go up quite often to the, when I was still living back up in Canada, I used to go to the Canadian Open at Glen Abbey. And, you know, I'd gone for many, many years back when Jack Nicklaus and Lee Trevino, in fact, one of the first programs I did, I talked a little bit about a story that Lee Trevino and his caddy Herman at the time walking around. But, you know, on the range, what's always amazes me with these guys is, sure, on the Thursday and so forth, when they're actually playing, you know, they're coming out a little bit before and they're certainly hitting some practice shots now, but they're not really, they're working on things that they've been really working on all week, but not in a full practice session. By that time, they've, you know, they're taking whatever game they've got that particular day. But as you said, the Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, they've got the practice station set up and they're working diligently on whatever it is that they're trying to fix that particular time. But then when the round gets ready and they're out there playing, you know, Thursday through Sunday, they're not setting up the practice stations. They're there with what they've got and they're ready to play. And unfortunately, the average club golfer out there is not doing that. They're going out and just hitting ball after ball and after ball at the driving range or at the practice range. And then they're going out when they're playing with their friends on a weekend golf game, and they're trying to fix everything while they're, you know, during the round. They're hitting a slice here and there, and they're trying to fix all of this stuff while they're, and it just gets progressively worse throughout the round. And then, of course, the frustration sets in. So what I want to do with one of the things, Chuck, that I want to do with this particular program is, and by having, you know, some teaching professionals such as yourself that are well seasoned and been out there for a long, long time, what are some things that we can tell and do to get the average golfer out there? What's some tips that we can give them to set up? Let's, without going through the whole thing, let's sort of set up a mini practice station for some of these people to take to the range next time.
Well, I mean, the one thing that I would do, because every practice station, depending on what you're working on, could be different. I mean, VJ's is totally different than somebody else's, as an example. But I would definitely take that driveway marker and put it out in front, and I would work on starting the ball one way or the other. Now, if you as a club golfer are standing there and you can't get this ball started in a certain direction, and 9 times out of 10 it starts in the opposite direction, then that's
right.
a shot you need to, that's a shot you need to play unless you're willing to put in the time to fix it. So
right.
if you know that you're going to if you know you're going to start that ball left of that stick every single time, or 9 times out of 10, then all you need to do now is move your path a little bit farther
mm-hmm.
left so that you have a playable fade for a right-handed golfer.
Exactly.
And that's what you
well,
need to practice on. If you want to practice learning how to hit a draw, then you need to know how to set it up to learn how to hit a draw.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's what many of the, I think particularly with some of the older players, you know, Trevino is a good example. I mean, he always had a very open stance. Now, even though he could draw the ball, and of course, Nicklaus, his stance was always a little bit open, but he played with that fade for years and years and years. And certainly not that he couldn't hit a straight ball, but he knew that that fade was what worked for him, and he adjusted his game accordingly. But he always did that, whatever, like what you just said, whatever he was playing with that particular day is what he took out on the course during his round. And then when he went back after or the next day when he was practicing, then he would work on things that he knew that needed to be fixed or adjusted or fine-tuned
right.
and not during the
right.
round. And this is something that, you know, has really, I guess, been a little bit of a pet peeve of mine for years is to watch some of these people at the practice range and driving ranges that just really don't have a sense of purpose. And obviously, if they're just playing once in a blue moon, they really don't care. But for those that really want to improve their game, you've got to have some sort of a practice with some sort of a sense of purpose.
Well, you do. And if you're serious about improving, then you need to find, you know, the local instructor that you want to work with. And then, you know, I've learned through all these years that if somebody says, you know, I want to take a lesson package or whatever from you.
Okay.
You know, I, for years and years and years, I never did that. I started off doing it, and then I stopped because you'd see little Johnny at you know, he'd come in for a lesson, and then 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, he'd come back, and you'd say, have you had time to practice? No, I have not really had time.
Right.
So you wind up working on the same things you just worked on. So now I do have these player development programs now, and so they're required between lessons to attend what's called a supervised practice session so that I can monitor and make sure they're working on what they're supposed to work on. So I do tons of those things. So they take a lesson, they come to a supervised practice, lesson, supervised practice, you know, whatever they're doing, but I have to make sure that they're working on what they're supposed to work on, that they don't fall into those bad habits when you don't see them, you know, for 3, 4, 5 weeks, sometimes 2 months, you know?
Right. And yeah, and that's what happened. I know some of the ones that I've taught over the years, that was one of the things that I always used to really get on to them about was, you know, there's no point coming to take a lesson or two or a package, as you said, and then not go and work on some of the things that we've discussed during the session, because you're just,
right.
you're wasting your time. I mean, obviously it's not wasting my time really, because, you know, that's what I do. But at the same time, if they're not willing to put in the time in between, because it's kind of like, if you will, now obviously some people are born with a God-given gift and just have the ability to hit ball after ball. I mean, I've witnessed that myself on the range many, many times where they've never had as much a lick of a lesson in their life, and they can go out there and this is going back before you had the equipment that you have now, and they could stripe one, you know, 250 yards out in the middle of the fairway very easily without even thinking about it. But they really didn't have the desire, which is something they just enjoy hitting golf balls, never really played anything serious, but they just had that athletic ability and just the coordination to pull it off. But not everybody's that lucky. And but, you know, that's something too that, you know, you have to be willing to put in the time if you want to improve, especially, you know, if you're playing every weekend with your friends, or you're playing in maybe some mini tours or things like that, obviously the better, more seasoned players, they know what they have to do. They've been doing it for years. But some of the weekend golfers and things like that, just after all that's available out there, all the technology and you know, Golf Channel and so on and so forth, that it just doesn't seem to be registering for some reason. And I just don't understand why. I mean, everybody from yourself to myself to all of the other pros out there are basically telling them the same thing. You know, if you're going to try to improve your game, these are some of the things that you need to do, but they just don't want to do it.
Well, and then from an instructor standpoint, you have to prioritize. You know, what is the number one thing this player needs to work on? And that's what we did when we developed the Pure Strike Five Simple Keys. You know, we went back the past 100 years. We looked at the game's greatest players, and then we took, what are these guys doing and gals doing in common? You know, what are some of the commonalities? And there was 5 key areas. And so all of our teaching focuses on one of those 5 areas. And so if their head's moving all around, we might focus on a steady head. If their pressure is not moving forward, we might work on that weight pressure forward. If they're flipping the club, we'll work on the hands in front of the club head. If their path is off and they're too much, you know, what we would call outward, in to out, or too much inward, which is, of course, out to in, we'll work on the path. And then the final thing we'll work on is the club face relative to that path so they can get a playable shot. But when you boil it down from an instructional side and you can minimize the areas that you're looking in, that makes our job easier. And for the student, it makes their job easier because they're only thinking about one of these 5 things. They're not thinking about 27 different things, hopefully.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of tough to stand, you know, up on the first tee in a foursome, and you got a $10 Nassau, and your phone's ringing on your hip, and you're thinking about your sales quota. That's probably not going to work very good that day.
No, and I've seen that many times in corporate outings. I can remember a number of years ago playing especially when cell phones, they're not as they weren't as small as they are now. And I can remember quite often in some of these corporate outings, and all the executives would have these cell phones strapped to the side of their hip, and they were just these monstrosities. It was almost like a walkie-talkie in comparison to today's technology.
Yeah.
And I used to just think to myself, you know, and some of them, it was so cumbersome, they'd actually be shifting the other way, because a lot of them would put it on their right side, and of course, to compensate, they'd be shifting, you know, to the left, and they'd wonder why they had the precursor to a reverse pivot, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, but you know, that's just unfortunately the way things are. You're not going to be able to convince everybody. Chuck, let me just very quickly here. I just want to let our listeners know, next week I'm going to have, on July 18th, I'm actually going to be out of town for the week, but I'm still going to do the show. We're going to be doing it sort of on the fly live. I'm going to be going to San Antonio, Texas for a little vacation, but I'm still going to be doing the program next week, July 18th. And my guest that evening is going to be Steve Pratt, a teaching professional from Westlake Village, California, and he's studying under the Mike Austin golf swing. And some of the topics we're going to be talking about next week are the long drive champions, and also some of the benefits as a teacher using TrackMan, and just a few other things, of course, that we're going to throw in there as well. So Steve Pratt's going to be joining me next weekend next Thursday, excuse me, at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time here on Golf Talk Live. But I'm going to be heading westward, as they say, to San Antonio, Texas for a week's vacation. I need to get out of the rain and so forth here that we've been experiencing in Northwest Florida, well, actually all of the eastern side, I guess, for the last week, and they're expecting more this weekend. So I'm heading out of town, as they say, for a week. But so Steve's going to be joining me next week. And right now I'm obviously with my very special guest, Chuck Evans, who is the Executive Director of Instruction for the Medicus Golf Academies. And Chuck, just to move on here a little bit, I want to get into the tour. Who are some of the obviously everybody is interested in who's doing what and that sort of thing on the tour. Who are some of the guys that you like to watch, or gals for that matter? Who do you enjoy watching and why?
Well, I really like watching Jason Day and his golf swing. You know, I just think he's got an aesthetically good golf swing, and it's proven to be pretty efficient. Jason Duffner, just kind of like his demeanor, and it, you know, he's just on a stroll out in the park somewhere, and his swing is just super repeatable. And again, you know, these guys keep it. Justin Rose, obviously, you know, with his latest win, I mean, everybody's always thought he had a great golf swing, and it held up under pressure. You know, when you watch Phil, when you watch Phil, it's you never know what's going to happen. So that's why you watch Phil.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, and just to add on to that, because you mentioned Justin Rose, what's also interesting too, of course, he won the U.S. Open. What was interesting was Adam Scott this year winning the Masters. Same thing. Adam Scott has a very, very solid swing. And a lot of people expected, you know, obviously he's won some tournaments, but expected him to break out even earlier in the majors. And it took him a while. But again, it's held, you know, he has the same swing. He's not making a lot of changes. And it's held up over time. I think, you know, with a lot of these guys, what ends up happening is I think they get that monkey on the back that Phil had for so many years. They're a great player. I mean, there's so much competition out there. It's not like, I mean, not that there wasn't competition before, but nowadays there's just such a push with guys like Tiger that's come out here and just sort of had rejuvenated a lot of people for many, many years. And you've got so many young, talented players coming up that the competition is so fierce that it's really, you know, it's tough to be a standout, if you will, you know, that's going to be out there and just dominating. Now, Tiger was an exception to the rule, but as we've seen, a little bit of time and suddenly he's not as dominant as he was there for a while. And Phil, as you said, you know, once Phil broke through that first Masters, boom, I mean, he was out of the gate, and next thing you know, he's racking up some majors as well. But yeah, Phil's an interesting one. I certainly love Phil. He's a great guy, but yeah, you never know from week to week what you're going to get.
Exactly. And you know, Phil would be one of those guys that you might not like his golf swing aesthetically. And sometimes he can be a little wild, but you know, going back to, if you look on Sundays in the last group, the person that usually winds up losing that event is the person that over-curved their golf ball a couple of times.
Yep.
So when we talk about these five things that we always look at in these keys, even the world's best players have an issue with club face control. You know, it'll be too open or too close to their path, and it produces an overcurve. And in my opinion, that's how golf tournaments are lost on Sunday, because that one of those players in that last group overcurved their golf ball. And again, it was Phil this year, like it was the year Jeff Ogilvie won the Open. He overcurved the golf ball.
Yeah, and I'm really surprised. You know, I mean, Phil obviously is, as we all know, has a phenomenal short game, but yet for some reason it still doesn't save him come Sunday. I mean, obviously he's won many, many tournaments, and I'm certainly not taken away from that, but I've noticed that too. And I agree with you, Chuck. A lot of the players that seem to collapse on Sunday overcurve the ball. And obviously these guys know what they're doing. It's not like, you know, they're the Sunday golfer out there that's slicing or hooking the ball. These guys are intentionally hitting these shots, but for whatever reason, whether it's the pressure or combination, just tend to overcurve things. And you're right, you know, that's probably why Phil lost this year. But you know, it's something.
And look at Jim Furyk 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, how many times anybody ever seen him hit a shot like that he hit on that 17th tee? I guess it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He's never hit that shot before and hasn't hit it since. But there's another case of ball overcurving, you know.
Yeah, and you want to talk about somebody beating themselves up. I mean, you know, a lot of the regular club golfers out there, they have a bad round in that. These guys, when they have a bad shot like that, you know, I mean, Phil's had many of them over his career, and I'm sure there's shots. And I remember Trevino talking about years later, he'll go back to a specific shot, and it'll haunt him, you know, 25 years later, you know, just because he knew that was something that shouldn't have happened. But people, too, also have to understand, you know, with these guys, what happens with these guys as opposed to the average guy out there, when you're swinging that golf club and it's going 100 plus, you know, miles an hour, the slightest, you know, that blade moving the slightest degree open or close can make the difference. And even though these guys you know, incredible control, even they tend to make mistakes now and then, or like I said, whether it be pressure or what have you. And I think that that sometimes will happen, whereas, you know, the average person, it's more or less their swing mechanics are not good or so forth. But who are some of the other...
But they feel pressure, too. They just feel it in a different sense. You know, if they're out there playing with their boss or clients, you know, they're trying to not play horrible. So that just puts more pressure on them. And then if they're standing up to a hole and they happen to be a slicer of the ball and there's water on the right, that's putting a lot of pressure on them because the only thing they're thinking is, oh, don't hit it right. Well, the brain doesn't know do from don't. It heard water and it heard right. So guess where the ball's going?
Yeah, and the, you know, obviously the touring professionals, whether it's the guys on the PGA or the Champions Tour or even the ladies on the LPGA, you know, they've learned to tune that out. They know how to. I mean, it's not that they don't see it and they're, you know, obviously it's in front of them, but they've learned to be able to tune and block that out. So they've got a specific target that they're going to, and that's what they're focusing on. They're not focusing on the trouble. They're focusing on the target that they want to get that ball to, and they're getting ready to set up for the next shot. And that's the difference. And that's really what a lot of these men and women that are out there that are either just learning the game or have been playing for a while and just don't seem to be improving need to start doing, is they need to start focusing on where they want the ball to go and work on how to get that ball there and forget about the trouble. Because you're going to find trouble every once in a while. But if you focus on your target, more often than not, you're going to end up succeeding and getting to your target, as opposed to if you're worrying about the bunkers over here and the water, as you say, over here, and maybe there's a creek running across the middle of the fairway. You know, they've got all these different thoughts coming in their head, and it's no wonder they're not making a good swing.
Well, you know, we've got a couple of members here that are, we've got several good players here, but one that I've known for a long time, and I'll go out with him. And you know, he's fairly long with his driver. Well, when you stand up on the hole and it is, let's say, 230 to the first bunker on the right or left to make a difference, but it's a 260 carry to a fairway that's 18 yards wide, every time we get up there, he's thinking about hitting his driver and he's worried about going in the bunker. I go, well, don't worry about that. Take less club, get to a number that's short of the bunker, then you're not to worry about it. So he's focused too much on the bunker instead of focusing on the club selection. And that's what a lot of amateur golfers do also. They'll pick out driver no matter how tight the fairway is, how long it is, or how short it is. They always pick out driver.
Yeah, and that's the obvious, you know, and that's the difference, you know, between the top players and the everyday golfer out there, the high handicappers out there, is the top players know better. They know that if they've, you know, got to carry something and they can do it with a, you know, a Tiger has done it for years, you know, with a 3-wood or something to that effect, or even a 5-wood, you know, if that's all he needs to hit to get to his target, then that's what he's going to hit. Whereas the higher handicapper, they're going to say, well, no, I'm going to, you know, I want to get down there as far as I can because I just want, you know, an 8-9 or a wedge into the green, you know, like the pros are doing on TV. So I'm going to pull my driver out because I know I can carry those three bunkers that are there and I'm not worried about the water over there. And as I said, the creek running across, and next thing you know, they're either raking the sand up or they're fishing their ball out of the creek or the pond that they've just hit the ball into.
Yeah, but, exactly.
You know, and this is something that I want to try and do on here as well, Chuck, is I want to really bring some people on here and just try to get some of these thoughts out here from the teaching professionals and let the listeners key in. Let me ask you something, keeping on the topic of the professionals and things like that. I want to get your thoughts on equipment. I've asked a number of the guests about this. What are your thoughts on the equipment? Do you think that, and I'm referring to both the you know, the driver, things like that, with technology changing, and the ball. Do you think it's too much, or do you think it's just a natural progression?
No, I think the ball is too much. Not for the average player. It is too much for the professionals that play for a living. I mean, they basically turned all these courses into chip and putts. The club player, you know, needs extra distance. You know, they want to feel that hitting it farther. It's interesting that several years ago, we did a study of a persimmon wood versus, and it was metal drivers, graphite shaft, and we used
right.
range balls, and our dispersion or our difference was 7 yards difference.
Mm. Right.
And then I just heard that over in Europe somewhere they did a test, and it might have been the RNA, they did the same test with today's driver versus a persimmon, and theirs was 4 yards difference. So all this hoopla about a driver going 30 yards, you know, farther, you know, my question would be to the average golfer, first of all, that they're now putting 46-inch shafts in a driver.
Yeah,
there is
I know.
Nobody playing golf for a living that uses a 46-inch driver. You know, they're using 44, 44 and a half, 45 max. So if
right.
you're a club golfer and you're hitting it into the right rough with your current driver, and now you get a driver that goes 25 yards farther because it has an extra inch in the shaft or whatever, you're no longer in the right rough. You're in the right trees.
Yeah, so exactly.
You haven't done yourself any favors at all.
Right, and I agree. I mean, I think obviously with equipment, and I think everybody was sort of on the same page, you know, obviously the manufacturers, they want to get out there, and one of the things that we talked about last week was, and weeks prior, was about how the technology seems to be favoring the driver as far as the equipment side of it's concerned, but mm-hmm. the ball is right, and obviously, you know, Mr. Nicholas has been very public over the years about the golf ball needing to be scaled back, particularly at the tour level. I mean, I think he's in agreement with you. I think for the average club golfer, the average person out there, I don't think he's really sees an issue with it so much. But for the tour level, is for sure, you know, he has said for years publicly that he thinks it should be scaled back, that it's just going too far. And you know, one of the things that I think that they can certainly do to you know, unless they decide that they're going to change and you know, heed his words, is do what they did at this year's Open at Marion, and that's, you know, to make it a little bit tougher. I mean, you know, Marion was, 69.96, I think, was the yards from the very back tips. Not an overly long course by today's standards. I mean, there's one just up the street from where I am, Windswept Dunes, which is, I think, from the tips is about 77 or 7,800 yards. So that's, you know, that's, yeah, exactly. You need a definitely driving a cart to go on around that one. But, you know,
yeah.
one of the things that I've always found, and this is another area that I want to get into, getting back to practicing in a moment, but I don't have a problem so much with the equipment end of it. I think it's, you know, it's a natural progression. I mean, same with technology and electronics. I mean, we've got the iPhones now, we've got the iPads. It's just a natural progression in our society that we're going to have technology. But I just wonder sometimes if they're pushing too much in one direction and not really focusing, and I'm referring to the manufacturers with the drivers and things like that, because, you know, as we talked about, I talked about somebody recently the other night on the phone, how they went from, remember when Big Bertha came out, and of course, you know, it was not much bigger really than some of the older persimmon woods, but then they come up with the Great Big Berth, and then I can't remember which one followed after that. It just kept progressively. Now it's what, 460 cc,
right?
And there's just these, you know, now when you put down some, and I have a Big Bertha at home, and when I put that thing down now compared to the newer drivers, it actually, even to me, seems odd, because I'm so used to seeing these ginormous drivers that when you try to play a smaller, which at that time was considered a big driver, it doesn't fit with the eye any longer. And I just wonder that, you know, is there really any big benefit to the equipment?
Well,
other than
well, obviously, if you have a larger head, it's easier to hit it somewhere in the club face.
Sure.
But what I do with a lot of players that are having, you know, issues hitting it heel, toe, and not really, you know, finding the sweet spot,
mm-hmm.
is I will put them in a persimmon driver, and now that head is about the fourth, you know, is about a fourth the size of the one they're using, and I'll tell them, when you can hit this in the center, you'll be able to hit yours in the center all the time. So I have them practice actually hitting small head persimmon drivers or small head metal drivers.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I don't have a problem with the equipment side of it as much. I agree, though, as you and obviously as Jack Nicklaus has stated with the ball, I think that the ball is just, you know, I mean, I don't know how much longer. Surely they can't find a way of making it go further than what it does now, but I'm sure they'll come up with something within the next few years. But, you know, it's a shame because I'm sure courses, and I've mentioned this a couple of times now in the program, courses like Augusta National, I mean, how many times have they had to lengthen that over the last, 5 to 10 years just to keep up with things? And, you know, really, obviously it's still a difficult course, but at the same time, you know, where else are they going to go? I mean, what else can they do to really combat that? Either they can speed up the greens, or they can, you know, grow up the rough a little bit more and things like that. So they need to make some sort of a change. And I think the golf ball is probably the most logical because equipment, I mean, it's gone too far now anyways. They're not going to be able to scale it back. But the golf ball, they certainly could at the tour level.
Well, and that's right. It's the only way they're going to get golf back to normalization, I would say, you either have two things. You either have to lengthen the golf courses for these tour players to about 8,200 yards, or you've got to cut back on the ball. So when you have guys on the senior tour that are hitting it 50 yards farther than they did 30 years ago, that's telling you something.
Yeah, there's something wrong with the math. Yeah, on that. And I agree. And you're right. And that's exactly what the point is. I mean, you know, in the days of Palmer and Nicklaus and Trevino and Player and Watson and all these other great golfers that are now, many of them have gone out. Some of them are, you know, not on it anymore, but that have progressed to the Champions Tour and things like that. Obviously, it's nice to have that equipment, and it's great to be able to hit the ball well and things like that. But, yeah, when they're hitting it, you know, 40 and 50 yards further than they did when they were on the PGA Tour and they're 20 years older, it just doesn't make sense.
And part of it can be the equipment. Yeah, part of it can be the equipment, but the majority of it, I think, is a golf ball.
Yeah, I agree. You know, one of the things that you know, I've always sort of thought in my own mind here is you know, you can put whatever equipment you want in a person's hand, but if they don't have the basic fundamentals and the skills, it's really not going to reap the benefit that they're hoping to get. And that's one of the things that bothers me a little bit about some of the manufacturers is they're so bound and bent on, and you know, I love the equipment. It's interesting to see it. But that's one of the things that's really bothered me for a number of years is that this big push, at, you know, bigger and better drivers and going to get those extra 20 yards. Well, if you look at some of the drivers that are out in the market today, every year they put a new product out or two products in some cases, they keep getting, you know, another 10 yards, another 15 yards, another 20 yards or 30 or whatever the case may be. And I'm sitting thinking, well, if you're hitting your driver now or back then in the beginning, say 240 yards, and every year you change drivers and you're hitting it 10 to 15 or 20 yards longer, within about 5 years, you're hitting over 300 yards.
Exactly.
And, you know, and so where is it going to stop? You know, you can only hit it so far. And on most of the courses, even some of the ones that have been lengthened, you know, your par threes, they've lengthened some of them, but your par fours, you know, anywhere from, you know, 420 or it used to be actually in the high threes. Now it's had to get into the 400s because you can't, with the equipment now, the par four at, you know, 387 or 395 is even for the average golfer, is just too short because they're almost, a lot of them are almost driving the greens.
Right.
And
you know,
you're,
the average...
It's not enjoyable.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, it's not enjoyable.
Golfer, no, it isn't. And the average club golfer, you know, they see these players on a 450-yard par 4 hitting 8 or 9 iron into the green and sometimes wedge, you know, and now they think they should be able to do that. Well, you can if you would just play the tees forward. Just because you're male and you're full of testosterone doesn't mean you have to play from the tips. You know, move up to where you can hit the same club they're hitting into the green, and you're going to feel a lot better about your game.
Well, a great program that's out there, obviously the Tee It Forward program, and I know that was a plug from you for that particular program, and that is, I think, fantastic. It's long overdue as far as I'm concerned. It should have been out, you know, 25 years ago, because that's another thing that I have an issue with a lot of, you know, when you're going to a lot of the courses. And it's almost really, I wish that they would have some sort of a means test, if you will, for for people coming out to these courses, because you get these guys that come out there, like you say, they're full of testosterone and they think they can play like a tour player, and they're playing from the very back tees, and you know, maybe the course is 7,500 yards, and they just don't have the game to support it. And you know, the golf industry is criticizing, the media is criticizing about slow play. You know, the tour play is a little bit different, you know, that's a whole different issue. But with the average golfer, this is why you're getting 5 to 6 hour rounds on some of these golf courses, is because people are just, they're not playing from a realistic position on the tee. They're playing too far back, and their game just does not support it. And if they would only move up one or sometimes even two tees forward, they'd have a much more enjoyable round and probably score better and feel better about themselves.
Right. I mean, and if you look at the top reasons why people are leaving the game, the number one reason is it takes too much time.
Right.
The number two reason is the cost. Well, you know, I think the U.S., and we've talked about this for the last couple of years as well, we need to let people have the option of playing six holes. They can go out with their husband, their wife, their kids. You can go out and play that six holes, an hour and a half max probably. Just play six. If you want to keep going, then play another six. But I think we need to have some definitive six-hole courses to keep people in the game. Because, again, if time is an issue, but you want to play golf, why not just play six holes? And most golf courses, you can't do that. You're going to pay a full greens fee. And if you want to play six, then you got to drive all the way back in. So why not just open some six-hole facilities?
Yeah, and there was something else that I talked about in one of the previous, I believe it was another teaching professional, Brian Dobby, that was on here from the Montclair Club up in New Jersey. He had mentioned that as well. And we talked about one of the other things that really I think needs to happen in the industry is more ranges being geared for the short game as opposed to just, you know, those getting up there and hitting their driver. Because really when you think about it, the majority of your round is probably within the very, well, for sure 150, but really 100 yards and in, where you're really your best chances of scoring. I mean, you can hit a great drive in that, but if you can't master the short game, and obviously we've had some great people over the years like Tom Kite and that had phenomenal short games, and obviously Phil has a good short game in more modern times. But there's really not, I mean, and I understand why they're trying to appeal to the public, but one of the things that we've talked about on the program here is a need for not only, you know, playing six holes, come out with some courses that as you said, that cater to a shorter round, because people's time is much more important. People have families, as you said in the earlier segment of the program. But also, and the short game is something that really needs to be more focused on. I know the teaching professionals are doing their bit, but I think the industry in general needs to take a sort of leap of faith and say, instead of, you know, building these big ranges where people can whip out their drivers, let's build some good quality ranges out there that people can focus on, you know, with a few greens that they can work on, their bunker and chipping and that sort of thing, and putting, and work on more of a short game range facility. And I wish they would have more of those out there, because I think if people were pushed in that direction to focus more, even some of the tour players that you see today, we talked about this last week, even Chuck had mentioned this, that even some of the tour players out there, they're more focused on hitting the long, and yeah, they're accurate and so forth compared to your average golfer, but their short games are not as good as some of the other ones that we've seen in the past. And that's because they're too busy worried about how far they can hit the ball down the down to the fairway.
Right. Well, and, you know, you've been at facilities, I have too, that have great short game areas.
Right.
And you go to those facilities, and rarely do you see anybody at the short game area.
No.
Because, again, it's all about, well, I want to hit my driver, I want to hit it deep, and I don't care where it's going. Well,
right.
But look, you could save strokes if you did this, this, and this. You know, we have a short game assessment that we have our players take, and it's within 60 feet of the hole, not yards, feet. And
right.
And there are 5 different segments that you take, a total of 50 shots. And we have all of the PGA Tour averages for these 5 shots. And when I give that to people, without fail, they can save 5 to 7 shots by getting better at these 5 areas just within 60 feet of the green, but yet you never see them out there doing it. So I would be in favor of having short game practice areas. The problem is the public doesn't buy short game practice areas.
You have a very small percentage. Yeah, and this is where thank you for saying that, because that's going to lead into our final segment here, is really how to grow the game. How can we grow the game and sort of mold it into a little bit different mold, if you will, than what's been there? And one of the things, just to give you an example, I think part of the reason is the industry is really to blame for this. And I'm, again, not trying to throw a specific blame, but I think with technology and with the manufacturers pushing these big-headed drivers and hitting it farther, we've sort of created a monster, if you will, by focusing on that. And it now, you know, you're trying to, in the industry, trying to reverse that and getting people to focus on that. And they don't want to do it. They, like you said, they want to hit it deep, and that's all they care about. And I think one of the ways that we can do this is to make those short game sessions more fun. Find some creative ways, and a great way is, I had a guest on here a few weeks ago. I'm sure you probably know him, Trent Warner, from Inglewood, Colorado. He wrote a great book called Golf Scrimmages. And a lot of the teaching professionals, he said, have picked up this book. And he's got a lot of different games in there that really focus. I mean, they're all parts of the game, but particularly the short game. He's got some great games in there that can be utilized. And I think that we have to, the industry in general has to sort of come together, not just the teaching professionals, but the manufacturers and that, and have to start really being creative and finding ways to make it more interesting for the average person. Certainly I don't want to take away from the other aspects of it, but focus more on the short game and getting people, because I think that they'll enjoy it much better if they're, I mean, give me a good example. We talked about this last week, Don and I, and he was mentioning about some of the ladies that he's worked with, how they're very, very good at chipping and putting and things like that, because they know they can't hit it a mile like some of the men can. So they focus on that aspect. And that's why you tend to see, like even on the LPGA, you tend to see some very good chippers of the ball, very good putters of the ball, in some cases much better than the men. And I think it's just that mindset, particularly with the male species, we're, like you said, we're going gangbusters. We want to pull out that big driver, and we're focusing on hitting that thing, you know, 275 to 300 yards down that fairway, and that's what we're focusing on. And, you know, we need to sort of retrain the average, you know, person out there, the average golfer out there, to say, hey, the real part of your game that you really need to be focusing on is your short game, not the long game.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're right. Women, that is a great equalizer, is short game, because it doesn't take any strength. So if they can get really good in their short game, yeah, they're not going to keep up with the guys by and large, and they're not going to hit as many greens, typically, your average club female golfer. So they need to be able to get up and down, you know, pretty effectively to lower their scores.
Right, exactly. Just very quickly before we come into this final segment, Chuck, I just want to let our listeners know, for those of you who are tuning in a little bit later in the program, of course, this evening my very special guest is Chuck Evans, the Executive Director of Instruction for Medicus Golf Academies, and he's out right now at in Kansas City, Missouri, at the Tiffany Greens Golf Club, and he's going to be there throughout the summer, and then he'll be heading over to Arizona. Next week, as I mentioned earlier, I'm going to be joined by another special guest, Mr. Steve Pratt, and he's the teaching professional out in Westlake Village, California, and he's going to be coming on here talking about the long drive champions and obviously the benefits of using some of the technology like TrackMan and that to the teaching professional out there. I've got another great guest coming the following week, July 25th, wonderful woman by the name of Randy Friedman, who is a speaker and mind coach and also golf pro at Golf Mind Power LLC. And she's the author of a book called Your Inner Swing. And she's going to be talking about the mental side. And there's sort of been a trend here, Chuck, that I've been doing here over the last several weeks. We started primarily with some of the talk about the junior golf programs. And that I had a very great guest on, Nicole Weller, who is a head teaching professional up in Savannah, Georgia, at the Landings Club there, and she talked about a lot about junior golf, and we've sort of been working through some different topics here, and I want to bring on, obviously, somebody that has some experience in the mental side of golf and how that's, you know, is important as well as the physical side of it, and that's some of the things that we're doing. Just, again, for those that you have tuned in here the last little bit, you can certainly call into the program if you like. The number is 646-716-4667. That number, again, is area code 646-716-4667. 716-4667. You can certainly talk to Chuck and I. You can email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com if you have some questions that you want to submit, or if you want to come on the program if you're a teaching professional. And also appreciate it if you'd visit us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/golftalklive blog. Make sure you go there and throw a few likes our way. We'd certainly appreciate it. Chuck, just in the final segment here, I mentioned want to talk about how we can grow the game. Let's start with the teaching professional. What are some of the things that the teaching professionals that we can do to help grow this game, to help nurture it along? And obviously, with the recent recession that we've been going through here for the last several years, it's hurt many aspects of the golf industry as other industries. A lot of courses have shut down or had to scale back, and you know, the downsizing here and there. But we want to, obviously, as we come through this recession and things get building up again, what can we do as a teaching professional to help grow this game?
Well, you know, juniors are the future of golf. And I would offer this suggestion to all the teaching professionals that you focus more of your time on your junior programs, getting juniors in school, visit the schools, do programs for the schools, for the kids in their gym classes, set up programs for them to come, not only for your elite juniors, but, you know, kids that just want to get in the game. Because the more we can get them involved in the game, then the more the game can grow going down the road. I mean, you
right.
know, guys my age, you're not going to teach many of them anymore because they don't have a lot of time left, so they don't want to spend the time working on their game. But the kids, you know, you've got to get the kids involved, get them early, you know, make sure they're not forced into the game, you know, by a parent. But,
right.
you know, if you go to the school, visit the school, the gym class, put up some hitting nets and some foam golf balls, get them involved, get those kids to where they like that because, again, it's a place where they can meet. You know, they can all come to the tee, they can play golf. I mean, we have, for our littlest ones, we have what's called, it's their time. So it's the last 10 minutes, they can do anything they want. We call it kid time. If they want to go out
right.
there and swing and do like Happy Gilmore, they can do that. They can do whatever they want to do as long as it's not, you know, dangerous.
Right.
But the rest of it is trying to build, you know, confidence in them, get them to love the game like so many of us do. But then maybe it's got to be fun. And if you can get the kids to your tee, that's going to be twofold. You're going to grow the game that way. You're going to build your reputation as a teacher of the juniors that way. And there's already great junior programs all over the country.
Right.
But you have to not just do a week-long camp because you're going to see the kids for a week and you may not see them again. I suggest you do
right.
something where you put them on a year-round basis. And that's how
right.
you're going to develop players, and that's how you're going to grow the game.
Right. Now, as far as the industry itself, and I'm excluding because you've obviously just very eloquently let the listeners here know what the teachers and teaching professionals can do, what about the golf industry types, such as the manufacturers and even the course facilities and things like that? What role can they play in helping to grow the game? I mean, I know they've done some, you know, a lot of things over the years and that. And I know we've got some great programs like the First Tee program out there and many others around. But what about some of the manufacturers? What should they be doing to really be focusing on getting younger players in and things like that? What are some suggestions that you could offer for that?
Well, by and large, the manufacturers really don't offer junior golf clubs. You know, sure, some of them will have a, you know, a driver, a three, a five, you know, and a putter or a wedge. But, you know, there's a company in North Carolina called the Littlest Golfer, and I don't know if you're familiar with
right.
them, but,
yes.
you know, they deal with kids that are way younger than the average kids coming into junior programs. And they've developed you know, a clothing line and a club line, and Chris and Kerry are great people. You know, I know them and I spend time with them. You know, occasionally I see them every year at the show, but they're the only ones that I know of that have gone out there to try to get the smallest kids involved in golf. And by and
right.
large, the manufacturers go away from them. I mean, if you're a junior and you're looking for a full set of golf clubs, you basically have one road, and that's U.S. golf.
Right.
Well, what happens if you don't like U.S. kids golf? You know, I mean, you don't have a lot of choices. The facilities themselves. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is I know as an example, I mentioned her a few moments ago, is Nicole Weller from the Landings Club up in Savannah, Georgia. Right. I know that she works with, as little as two. And really she said something that you had mentioned just a few moments ago is really you have to make it fun. Because at that age, you know, you're not teaching swing mechanics to a two-year-old. Really what you're doing is you're – Yeah, they just don't have the capacity. I mean, they're gawking around looking at the bushes and things, you know, after a few minutes. So you have to find things and way of engaging them. And then as they progress and, you know, in years and things like that, then you can start to introduce really more. It's like what you said earlier on at the beginning of the program, is golf is sort of a little further down the ladder, especially at the junior level. Now, obviously, they've been playing for a while and they're a little bit older at a more teachable age, but at two or three or four, with the exceptions of the odd prodigy out there, like maybe a Tiger Woods and some of the other ones, they're not going to be able to understand or grasp anything. So you have to find ways of making it fun and interesting to keep them engaged. And then as they develop in years, then you start to, you know, progress into more of the golf and things like that. But sorry, go ahead. You had a thought there.
And you've got to have games for them. I mean, because their attention span is about 30 seconds. You know, you might have them standing over a putt and they see a bug, and then you've lost it. They're not going to putt anymore. So, but then the facilities need to open their doors to juniors. And a lot of facilities don't want to do that.
They don't look at it as profitable. That's the big thing. They're looking at the bottom, they're looking at the bottom line. And it's the same thing with the manufacturers. They know by moving out the drivers every year and things like that. And the latest, I mean, how many golf balls are on the market now? I mean, I've lost track. And the same thing with everybody. And I mean, they know who they are, but the manufacturers, the same thing. There's new equipment coming out each and every year, bigger and better, more improved. But they're really not focusing on the individuals themselves. And that, obviously that's our job to do that. But like you said, you're right. I mean, as the population is aging, it's difficult to take somebody. I would say probably once you get past, and I'm saying this because I'm hitting 50 next year, but say 55 and beyond, it's very difficult really to get them to change. They've kind of got their set in their ways, and they might want a few tips to help with certain things, but they're really not looking. And it really doesn't make any sense to just try and reinvent the wheel at that point, anyways. So you're right. We need to focus on as the younger players are coming up, and get them at a very early age and get them interested. And the last part of it I wanted to ask you, which is I'm leading into, is the public or parents and that sort of thing. What can we do? Like, for instance, obviously at the college level, you've got your Division I and so forth, but what about at the basic public schools? Now, maybe some of them are out there doing, but the majority of them, I'm sure, probably not. I would love to see golf more involved at a junior level in the schools. Like you said, having some driving nets. I mean, I know you have to be careful because of liability issues and things like that, but I would love to see that in the schools more at a younger age to get people interested. And then, as they progress, if they want to, take it more seriously and go and get some professional help. But I would love to see it introduced into regular sort of fitness part at most of the schools.
Well, and you can do that, you meaning us professionals. You can create an after-school curriculum that is credited towards your school, gym classes, and you can have them come to your facility to do that. You don't have to go to them. That would be it. You can go there to get them acquainted with it. But again, you're using foam golf balls, right? So you're not using normal golf balls when you take those indoors. And that's how you're going to get them involved. But you can also have it approved through the school system that you can be one of the people or one of the facilities they can come to after school and maintain credits and gym class and things like that.
Right. Yeah, and that's true. And they do have that all over. What about the parents? How can they help?
Well, they can not force their child to play golf.
Sure.
That would be the first thing. Parents, by and large, we're protective of children. We always want the best for them, but we can also be sometimes overbearing. So if you have a child that has an interest in golf, I would suggest that you get them, you know, out with someone to spend some time, you know, work on their game, hit golf balls, have a little fun, and then let them decide if they want to continue that. If they don't want to continue, the worst thing a parent can do is try to make a child play a sport that they really don't want to play, because they're not going to look forward to it. They're not going to stay in the game. As soon as they're old enough to make up their own mind, they're not going to stay. And right. I can't tell you how many times we used to sponsor some events on the AJGA. We have a parents meeting and a child, you know, a player meeting. Right. And I can't tell you how many of the kids I talked to, and I would say, hey, so you enjoying golf? No, not really. Why are you playing? Because my parents want me to. That's not the answer you want to hear, you know.
No.
As soon as that child can, they're going to quit playing golf.
Right. It's like the old analogy, you know, of piano lessons and things like that. If the child's really not into it and they're just doing it for the sake of appeasing the parents, and, you know, you really don't want that. And you're right, that's really something that the parents, you know, have to understand, is it's great. And the worst part, I think the worst culprits are obviously where, you know, as you say, little Johnny has some talent, and they see this, you know, this little kid out there, and he's belting these balls a mile, and they're thinking, wow, he's going to be the next, you know, Jack Nicklaus, or he's going to be the next so-and-so out there. And right away they're shoving him into lessons and they're doing all this. And, you know, little Johnny just doesn't, you know, really have the desire or interest to take it up. But he's going to do it because it makes his parents happy. And, you know, next thing you know, he's getting into his college years and they're shoving him again into, you know, some programs. And, you know, quite often, and I hate to use this, and obviously he's done well, but that kind of reminds me of the story of Sean O'Hare a little bit, you know, where you had a very aggressive father, and I'm saying it because it's well documented publicly with all the stuff that went on there, but I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But his father was very into his game, and just really, and it got to the point where obviously there became some legal issues in that, and that's a prime example right there, and that's at the top level. You know, you've got a young gentleman, Sean O'Hare, coming out on the tour and that, and his father's in behind there just, you know, sort of pushing and grinding away to the point that, you know, that Sean had to make a decision, and I'm sure it was a very difficult one. Nobody wants to have to make that decision, and that's really what you want to be able to avoid, is you want the kids, right, to be out there, have fun and enjoy it, and if they develop a passion for it and want to progress on their own, then that's when you nurture and help guide them into another, you know, level, if you will. Chuck, I just wanted to, in the last few minutes here, I want to give you another opportunity. Just, again, for those that have tuned in late, I'm with my special guest, Chuck Evans. He's the executive director of instruction with the Medicus Academies. And also, I neglected to mention, he is, by Golf Magazine, a top 100 teacher here in the United States, and certainly has earned his stripes well by teaching a lot of great people. And I know you did some work and out in with some of the tour players and things like that, at all, really all the tours. Any names you want to throw out there?
Well, you know, it's been a long time, and I can say this, that some of the tour players don't mind you using their names. Some of them do. And it's been so
right.
long that these players are long gone. But, you know, I've worked with Lisa Hall, who is Martin Hall's wife.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with Anne Marie Pauley. Several of the LPGA, Jan Stevenson. I mean, a lot of the LPGA
right.
players.
Right.
I had the opportunity to work with Grant Waite when he was still
mm-hmm.
playing. And Grant's now taking it to a new level. He's in the instruction end of it. And really
right.
proud and really happy for him, and he's doing a great
mm-hmm.
job. So, but you know, at the end of the day, it's you know, working. Some coaches want to hang their hats on tour players,
right?
And some don't. And to be quite frank, I don't want to do all the travel that's involved doing that anymore. I mean, I did it for 5 years and don't
right.
really care to do it anymore. You know, I've got my own little thing I need to take care of. It's much more satisfying to me to take a junior golfer or take someone and then have them go out and shoot their best round ever than it is
mm-hmm.
to work, you know, with a professional golfer. I mean, they're already professionals. They're already good players. You know, I mean,
right.
they don't really need anybody. They just need another set of eyes. So, So
exactly, that's exactly what I was about to say. Is it's really an extra set of eyes for them at that level, whereas the junior golfers or some of your higher handicappers that really do need somebody there to, you know, for lack of better words, to hold their hands through the process. Those are the ones that, you know, obviously you want to work with in that. But you know, one of the other things too that you know, I want to do with this program, and I've mentioned, and I'm going to mention it to you before I allow you the opportunity to plug your facilities. Not again. One of the things that I want to do with this program, Chuck, is develop a segment, and this is going to be coming in the new year, called Coach's Corner. And I've mentioned this to all of the guests that have been on here. And essentially, what it's going to be is it's going to be a more interactive with the public and things like that, where I will get to not only say someone such as yourself and Don and some of the other ones that have been on here, but get maybe two or three coaches on at the same time and allow the listeners to either call in, write in, email, text, I mean, whatever, you know, formats out there at that time. And just, you know, with questions and things that they would like to have answered. But the reason why I want to do it as opposed to just doing it a case by case or an individual structure is I want to get some different perspectives. I want to have, you know, more than one coach on at a time and just sort of throw the idea, whatever questions come our way, and just kind of get some different perspectives and different feedback for the individuals that are writing in or calling into the program. And also what I'm going to do with it, Chuck, is I'm going to rotate it out so that each week it won't be the same instructors. There'll be a different group. And I've had very good response, and then you can see I'm leading up to something here. I'm obviously throwing that invitation out to you, Chuck. I would love to have you come on again. Obviously, whenever you want, you're welcome to have an open invitation to come back on the program. But I would like you to, if you have the time and are willing to put some time, to come on for it'd be an hour segment during next year, and allow you an opportunity to come on with some other teacher professionals at the same program and take some calls and things like that from our listeners and give them an opportunity to more or less pick your brain and get some good advice.
Yeah, it'd be great. Love to be part of it.
And I just think it's something, and I agree with you. You know, I mean, it's fun and it's exciting to work with some of the top players and things like that out there on the tour, but you know, that's sort of in that 1% category, and there's really 99% of the public out there are never going to achieve that level. And
that's
so,
exactly.
You know, really you have to go where the majority is. And I just think there's so many people out there. And there's a lot of great programs out there, don't get me wrong, and I've mentioned this several times as well. I mean, obviously, the Golf Channel, a lot of people obviously watching that and getting some good tips there. But there's really not a format, if you will, out there right now that I've seen or come across for some time where teaching professionals from all over the place are able to come to one spot, if you will, and not only talk a little bit about their game, what they're doing and their facilities, but also allow the public a vessel, if you will, to contact them. You know, obviously we have our own websites and things like that and blogs that we're talking on, but there's really not a program that I'm aware of that really focuses. They're too busy focusing on the tours and things like that. And I just feel that I wanted to create something where teaching professionals like yourself and myself and some of the others that have been on and future ones coming on. So that's why I'm sort of leading up to that now by having all of you on here just to sort of introduce you to some of the ones that aren't familiar with you and get ready for that segment next year. So I hope that you'll come back and come on again, certainly on your own, but during that Golf Coach's Corner segments and participate.
Yeah,
I'd really appreciate
it. Sounds great. Yep, sounds great. I'd love to be part of it.
And just to sort of, as I said, we're just coming down to the last few minutes of the program. Chuck, I'd like you to just let the listeners know, again, about your facilities, how they can get a hold of you if they want to contact you or participate in some of the great programs that you're running at your academies.
Yeah, you can reach us through medicusgolfschools.com. And there's a contact phone number and email on there. Once you get to that, you can see some of the locations. You can see our instructors, and you can contact us straight through there. Or you can go to my personal website, which is chuckevansgolf.com, and all the contact information is on there as well.
Okay. Very good. Very good. So if you're interested, for those of you listening that want to get in touch with Chuck, or you want to visit one of his facilities that he's working with, Medicus Golf Academies, you've got the information there, and I'm going to make sure that I put it up on my websites and social media sites and that, so they can have access to it. And Chuck, I really appreciate you coming on the program. As I've said with many of my guests, it's a learning experience, not only for those that are listening, but also for myself. I always am a firm believer, especially in this great game of golf. You can never know too much. And any time that you can talk with somebody who's been in the business a little bit longer and pick up some tips that, you know, this is something, too, that I think the listeners have to understand is one of the other things that this program is doing is not just giving the average golfer out there an opportunity to get some tips or to listen to some instructors and get some input on the game, but also a lot of the other instructors out there are tuning in here as well. So it's a great way to exchange information, maybe some ideas throughout this program, and that's something. So, you know, maybe those of you that are listening to Chuck tonight might have picked up on some ideas, or maybe you want to get a hold of Chuck and just say, well, hey, this is an academy or this is a facility I'm running here, and what are some of the things that are successful for you and working at your facility that maybe I'd like to try here and vice versa. So this is another reason
And you know, Ted, we also have for our what we call our five simple keys system, which is those five areas I told you about. We have instructor certification programs, and you can find that out also on the Medicus Golf School site. You can also find that out on what's called golfshopcentral.com. That's where you can find the DVDs about the five simple keys. You can also see the instructors on there, and you can find out about how to become a certified five simple key instructor.
Okay, perfect.
All right.
Chuck, I appreciate you again coming on to the program. I want to thank you very much for your time. I know that it's everybody's busy and we've all got lots on our plate, so I know it's a lot to spend this much time with me on the air, and I appreciate it. I know the listeners will appreciate it. And Chuck, as I said, I want you to come back anytime you want. Just let me know, and you have an open invitation. And I will let you know as things progress further into our Coach's Corner segment for next year. I'll let you know when that's going to be on and if you want to participate, as I said, on that. And as I said, it's not going to be a requirement for each week. We'll rotate the instructors out because we realize that their times are valuable and they may not be able to make a commitment every week. So it gives it thing a little fresh perspective throughout the weeks, but at the same time gives you guys a chance to come on and work a little bit more with the public and let them talk to you and get some ideas that can help improve their game. So again, Chuck, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
Thanks, Ted. I appreciate it, and I look forward to doing it again.
All right. Thank you, and have a great evening, Chuck.
All right. See ya.
All right. Good night. Okay, so for those of you that unfortunately didn't make it through the live performance, we're just wrapping up here the last couple of minutes. I just have a quick announcement or two before we sign off. As I mentioned, next week I'm going to be in San Antonio, Texas for a well-deserved vacation, but the program is still going to be running live on July 18th, and my special guest that evening is Steve Pratt, a teaching professional from Westlake Village, California, and he studied the Mike Austin golf swing, and he's going to be talking a little bit about the long drive champions and, of course, the benefits of using some of the products like TrackMan out there. So you definitely want to tune into that. We're going to be talking about some interesting things there. I really want to get him on and talk about some of the long drive champions. On July 25th, which is going to be the week following that, Randy Freeman, she's going to be on. She's a speaker and mind coach and also a golf pro at the Golf Mind Power LLC. She's going to be coming on and talking about the mental side of golf, which is definitely a very important topic. And as I mentioned to Chuck a little earlier in the program, there's sort of been a trend, if you will, through the programs that thus far of bringing on different instructors and different golf professionals that specialize in different areas of the game. And so Randy, she's going to be coming on. She was also the author. In 2008, she released a book called Your Inner Swing. So we're going to talk about that book as well. August 1st, Meredith Kirk. She's the owner of Meredith Kirk Golf, and she's an LPGA member and a USGTF Level 3 certified golf teacher professional. I've spoken with Meredith a number of times through different social media sites and things like that, and certainly want to get her on the program. August 11th, Barry Goldstein, PGA teacher professional. A teaching professional, top 25 golf teaching by Golf Tips Magazine, currently down in Coral Springs, Florida. He's the proud father of really a fantastic young lady, his daughter Carly Rae Goldstein, who is a world and national champion. And she's won thus far, I think, about 99 tournaments in her junior career. And she's heading off to LSU next fall for her first year of college. And she's, of course, going to be playing on the golf team there. So she'll be playing with the Tigers. So those are some of the guests that are going to be coming up in the next few weeks. We've got more and more. If you're interested in, if you're a teaching professional or somebody in the golf industry and you're interested in coming on the program, you can certainly email me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. You can certainly message me. I'm on Facebook. It's Ted Odorico, and my last name is spelled O-D-O-R-I-C-O. Certainly, you can send me a message through there, or you can visit our Facebook page, Golf Talk Live blog, and it's facebook.com/Golf Talk Live blog. Certainly hope that you will visit that page at, on Facebook and throw a few likes. We certainly like you to like that. And you can certainly message. I've left it open so the public can put messages up there. So if you have any suggestions for future programs or things like that, we'd certainly love to hear from you. But anyways, as I said, I'm your host, Ted Odorico of Golf Talk Live. This has been another segment here on July 11th of 2013. My special guest this evening was Chuck Evans, Executive Director of Instruction at the Medicus Golf Academies out in Kansas City, Missouri, and other parts. And as he mentioned, there is one, a couple of up in Canada. I believe he said Winnipeg and Ottawa, so I'm going to check those out and talk to some of my golfing buddies back home and tell them to check out the facilities up there. Again, thank you very much for tuning in this evening to Golf Talk Live. I look forward to talking to you from San Antonio, Texas next week. Thank you. God bless, and have a great evening.